the new Lex Fridman podcast?
I haven't, no. I haven't watched Lex for a while.
The new one you'll want to watch.
Who's it?
It looks really good. It's I watched the first sort of 10 minutes of it. It's GSP, Danaher, and Gordon Ryan all together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like a super podcast. Are we recording?
Yeah, we are recording.
Oh, wicked.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a minute. Well, we've already started. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. My mic is not in the right position or nothing. I've got my tea. How are you doing, Jamie?
All good, man.
Jamie's back. So prepare for a technical dive, an analytical technical dive. Are you all good?
That's right. Yeah, all good, man. All good. Nice to be back.
Yeah, man. Couple of weeks on the outside of the camera watching Veronica do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you happen to edit her. We won't even tell you what she said. A lot of people have messaged me asking.
Yeah, a few people messaged me asking.
No, it's inappropriate. Wholly inappropriate. Okay. Oh, come on, iPad. That was a while it was off for as well. Merino. We're sponsored by Merino this week. Let's start there, Jamie. Go on.
Yeah, so this podcast is brought to you by Unbound Merino, long-term friends and partners of the podcast now.
Long-term clothers of the podcast.
Yeah, their stuff's great. Like, obviously, we've spoke about it a lot and I can't get enough of it. It's ethically sourced, comfortable, durable, fashionable. And if you want to jump on board and grab yourself some Unbound clothing, go to unboundmerino.com and enter the code OUTLAW at checkout and you get 15% off.
OUTLAW at checkout.
OUTLAW
15%
at checkout.
Off. Yep. Well, I went really loud then all of a sudden. You've got to get some of this. If you've never had merino before, you think, it's just clothes, it's just wool, it's just whatever. It's not. It's very, very different. I've mentioned it before, but when I was on the boat race, they told us to get merino because we were going to be wearing clothes for days at a time and we were going to be sleeping in them and then wearing them under our waterproof clothing, and you just kind of forget you've got them on. It's like a second layer of like insulation. It's brilliant stuff.
Yeah. Really nice.
And they've got some women's stuff coming out soon, which Veronica keeps emailing them about. So I'm sure they're getting sick of that. But she's desperate to get some of the women's stuff. It looks really nice.
Stop stealing yours.
Half of my stuff is actually gone with her to Paris. She's in Paris at the moment covering Aries. She's taken my hoodie. She's taken one of my t-shirts. She's taken my beanie. Fortunately, I've got a couple of bits that are a little bit too big for her, which works well for me. We are also brought to you this week by our good friends at X-Brain. These guys have been supplying me with my supplements for a long while. And I do get messages about what I use from a lot of dedicated athletes and martial artists out there. I've just grabbed a few because there are obviously a bunch of different things that I use regularly. But this purified collagen is brilliant. I use that after every training session to help recovery. I use this as a pre-workout. I've been using this for about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months now, consistently using it, and it's very good. Neuroptimax Pro, Alpha Brain, and all the other Onyx stuff as well. So get on X Brain. The code is the same. It's Outlaw. It's 10% off. And if you're looking to get Onyx stuff in Europe, it's the best place to get it because you won't have to deal with all the US shipping stuff. These are really good. You've been using these.
I've had a few, and they are really good. There's definitely like a noticeable difference when you take it.
I'm having one really right good. Now because I've got loads of recording stuff to do this evening. So it's going to power me through the day. So Unbound, make sure you check them out, and X-Brain. Okay. Should we get into some fights?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Are you on Tapology?
I am on Tapology, yes.
So the first fight on the card for you is Malcolm Gordon against Dennis Bondar.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
What do you reckon?
I watched both of these guys earlier and they're very similar stylistically. They're very jittery and very unpredictable, and I think it's going to be a bit of a mad scramble between them both. Malcolm Gordon, in his last fight against Figueiredo's brother, is it Dennis?
Yeah.
Figueiredo's the other one. he as soon as that fight started, he went in straight for a takedown.
Yeah.
Shot in straight away.
I think there's a good reason for that. I think there's a good reason for that. Because I was looking at his career and it's like he's had a rough run in the UFC. He's been put up against tough fighters all the way through. So In that first fight that he had in the UFC against Amir Albazi, he got caught in a triangle in the first round. So he's a very well-rounded mixed martial artist, but he does seem to prefer the ground a lot more. He's got a lot of submissions on his record, Rinnicky chokes, armbars, kimuras, etc. He ended up on the floor with Albazi. Albazi actually took him down. And in a scramble to try and escape mount, he got caught in a triangle. Then he came out against Sumudurji and got caught early, 45 seconds. So when he came out against Figueiredo, whose nickname is what is the sniper, I just think he's in his head. He was like, I've got to get my hands on him. I've got to keep him close just to be safe for a while. And obviously the pressure of two losses as well. He looks good, but I was very, very impressed with Bondar.
Yeah, I was as well. Yeah. Again, he's like similar stylistically, like, you know, very, very active on his feet, yeah. Very bouncy. But he seems a little bit more calculated with it.
That's the perfect word. And his nickname's Psycho.
Yeah.
Have you seen his face when he's facing off with people? Like, he literally just stares through them. And there is something very calculated when he's fighting. Like, there are real good examples in his fights. Come on, TV.
There we go.
There are really good examples in his fights where he switches from striking to grappling just almost effortlessly, just because he sees an opportunity to just shut a door for them, and then he goes back to striking. But when he's striking, it's vicious and it's purposeful. Like, there was one of his earlier fights before he came to the UFC, he was in his opponent's guard, and he was when he missed, did you see it? He was hitting the canvas.
Yeah,
and it was
like
reverberating through the cage.
Yeah, I think, was that against Jalfari? Because did he catch him in the rear naked afterwards?
Yes. Yeah. I watched some of his earlier ones as well, though. And he's just, like, there were a couple of guys he just bullied. They just didn't.
Yeah.
Igor Goncharov, WWF C13. He finished him with a knee, but just dominated him all the way through. Shut down his submission attacks. I was really impressed with him. I think it's quite an evenly matched fight, but I like the calculated approach for Bondar. Plus, he's coming in, he's making his UFC debut, and he's not got that pressure that Malcolm Gordon's got of, I've already had two losses in the UFC. If I pick up another one, you know what I mean? That's one in my last four that I've won. I think that pressure is not going to be very good for him, personally. Yeah. And I think they're expecting Bondar to be something quite special.
Yeah, I mean, I had Bondar for the win.
Mm.
I think it's going to be a really high-paced one, I think. But I think Bondar's just a little bit better technically and a bit more all-round. Can catch him in a few more ways than Malcolm could catch him.
Yeah, yeah. And a bit more calculated as well. You know what's interesting? His last fight was at bantamweight, and he's fighting at flyweight in this one. Okay. So he has drifted between weight classes then. That's interesting. So he's kind of undersized for a bantamweight, but
I did think he looked a bit small.
Yeah,
in his fights,
we might see someone quite special here, because I was impressed with the way he approached his fights. It's been a while since he lost, but his last loss was 2017. Like, there's been a lot of growth in that time, a lot of really strong performances. I think this one's set up for him to come and get a big win against Malcolm Gordon. And I think it's unfortunate for Malcolm, because there's already pressure on his shoulders. But I think he's going to run into a real tough one here.
Yeah, I agree. I had Bondar for that one.
Yeah. Okay. We will agree on the first one. This TV keeps flickering. It's pissing me off. I will get it fixed eventually.
Is it just the cable? Yeah.
It must be. It's probably the amount of dust in here, Jamie, honestly. There is a lot of dust on this. So it's a good thing you're on the other side of that camera lens, because holy shit. Okay, next one is Danilo Marquez against Jailton Almeida. I know it's not pronounced like that, but that's how I'm going to read it.
Jailton. Yeah.
It sounds like a place in like a Wild West movie where they keep all the bad guys.
Yeah. You know? Jailtown.
Yeah, Jailtown. this is a fucking really good one between two guys that have got a very, very similar approach. Now, Marquez has got like a... There seems to be a limit to the point where he can continue pushing. Like, if you watch, so his last fight against Nsejikui, first round he did everything he could to stay on his back. Second round he was able to take him down, but wasn't able to control him and finish him. Third round, he just looked like a broken man, you know, and he was like standing TKO. It wasn't even like he was knocked down. But then if you look at the Mike Rodriguez fight before that, where it went far more his way, like he was able to get him to the floor earlier. He was able to take his back earlier. And you can just see that system that he's working. You know what's interesting is he's not got loads of rear naked chokes earlier on in his career.
So something is kind of developed into his game.
It seems to be. I mean, he's got listed one other rear naked choke aside from the one against Rodriguez and an armbar win. There are five wins early on in his career that are unlisted, but you also can't click on those opponents, so they don't exist effectively. there's not much information about him there, but I think we're going to see two guys trying to do the same thing to one another.
I thought exactly the same, because they look so similar as the first fight, like stylistically. But I think it might be a bit standoffish to start off with, you know, who's kind of going to go for the takedown,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
I think Marquez, he's got really good trips, good takedowns, which I think were a little bit better than Gelton's.
Gelton.
So I think he's got a little bit more experience in that range.
Yeah.
So I think he might come out on top.
Yeah.
But then, as you said, he did gas in the last round. So you think if they're going three rounds at that pace, then yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's the one thing that stood out to me with Almeida's contender series fight and then his post-fight interview is the amount that, and this happens with a lot of the fighters, particularly the South American fighters, who not only are they're fighting to be MMA fighters and be famous and win the UFC and all that kind of stuff, but they also, there's a lot more financial motivation for some of these fighters, you know what I mean? And I got the feeling for him, like, after his win on the Ultimate Fight on the Contender Series, he was like bawling in the octagon.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then he's like, that's why I went to his post fight interview. I thought to myself, I wonder how he speaks. And he was very clear. He was very confident. I mean, obviously, you know, through the translator, but you could just tell he was really excited to have arrived there. The other thing he said, because he had a bottle of Howell ahead that Dana had given to him, and he said he wasn't going to open it until his first actual UFC win. And that's a big concern of mine, because I do think that, like, Danilo Marquez, I know that he's got two rounds in the tank, right? And I know that he can fight hard for 10 minutes and he can work in bad positions for 10 minutes. Like, I don't care what you say, but being clung onto someone's back as they're standing up, especially when you weigh 200 pounds, it's exhausting. You know, so that must have been a tiring thing to do. And he worked hard for 10 minutes.
Come on.
Technical difficulties, Jamie. Not having it. Let me put it on a footstool. See if it feels fancy. Okay. What was I saying?
Danilo.
Yeah.
He was on the back, yeah.
See, he's got 10 minutes in the tank. When it comes to Almeida, I don't know as I can say the same thing, because if you look down his record, he's got first round wins, lots of them. He's got a couple of second round wins, but his first, if you go back far enough, 2018, he's got a decision loss. Now, anyone can get knocked out in 16 seconds, and that's what happened in his other loss. It's just one of those things. You get caught, you get clipped, especially at these heavier weights. But a loss by decision and then loads of wins in the first and second round, and then you add the assumed that he's got probably 10 minutes of conditioning as well. You add the fact that he's now making his actual UFC debut and he's got that bottle of Howell ahead at home that he's not opening until he's won his first fight. And you know what I mean? Like, the amount he's kind of built it up. I got the feeling that he's layering pressure on himself because of that. And the only saving grace here, I think, is that Danilo Marquez will run out of gas as well. And I think that Gelton's in better shape. Like, physically, he looks in much better condition.
And much more athletic, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And they're both fucking huge as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
I've not got UFC.
Gelton looked massive.
They are both huge. I think 6'3 and 6'4. Oh, Paul Daly's, I never mind.
Yeah, Herzog looked like a little...
he looked like a hobbit.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I, I mean, Gelton's got the more experience, hasn't he? Like, record-wise.
Yeah. But then you see, there's a bit of a trade when it comes to experience. I would say someone with 10 fights in the UFC has got the equivalent to someone that's got 20, 25 fights outside the UFC. Especially because a lot of people build up the UFC and their debut and you know what I mean? It's like...
But I suppose the level of competition is just way higher as well.
It's considerably higher. Like, sometimes you'll see people with a win streak of submissions, and then they get to the UFC and it's just decisions.
Mm.
And they kind of... It's like they're sprinting on you know, pavement, and all of a sudden they run into mud and then sand, and it's like, oh shit, this is not nearly as easy as it was. I don't know if that's the case for Almeida. I'm just saying generally, but I do feel like he's built it up his UFC debut.
Yeah.
So he's actually 3 inches shorter than Danilo Marquez, but he has a 2-inch reach advantage. Is that your stomach?
No, it's my stomach.
Fucking
yeah.
No, are you hungry? Is he a protein bar?
No, I've had a lot to eat.
Just call X-Brain. You should get some of this collagen in here. Yeah, that's my only thought. I actually think I'm gonna say Almeida's gonna take it.
Yeah, I went for Danilo.
Did you? Yeah, yeah. I thought you might.
Just purely from, like you said, his UFC experience, and the experience in the range of grappling and jiu-jitsu.
Okay, so here's a question: do you think his last fight being a loss changes the way that he comes into this fight? Do you think he's more calm in the first round because now he felt like it running out of gas is horrible?
I think that would be the smart thing to do, is like reserve a bit of energy in the first, because if he knows he can work that same strategy but later on in the fight, then yeah. I think that might be the case.
Because, you know, if he coasts in the first round, and I mean, I've been doing the Adesanya Whittaker breakdown preparation, and I've been using it as an example all week. About winning rounds, like Yoel Romero beat Adesanya in the first round by 2 punches, and he only fought through 4 punches. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Like sometimes you don't have to do much to win a round.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he could be smart in that first round, not do a great deal, and then win the second and third.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if he's expecting Almeida to do the same thing to him, because I think that's what's going to happen. I think they're both going to try and chase one another's back up against the fence.
Yeah.
I'm taking the debutant.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with Danilo Marquez.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would it sway your pick if I told you that Almeida's coach is called Herrick Kong?
Herrick Kong.
Kong. I've just read it on his topology. I don't know who the guy is.
Probably not, no.
Is it not? But it would sway me. So he's being coached by a guy called Kong. Anyway, okay. So we're going opposite ways on that one.
Yeah.
Next one is a proper veteran of the women's divisions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Alexis Davis, 20-11, against Julia Stolyarenko at 9-5-1. So this is a bantamweight fight, and it's I feel like it's going to be a bit of a slugfest, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if we see them hit the floor, because Stolyarenko's got wicked arm bars, and Alexis Davis is a great grappler, a good black belt, but I think that might be part of the reason why we don't see it hit the floor is because they're both going to stand and punch. Like, we saw Stolyarenko happily trading in her last couple of fights.
And she got beat up by Kunitskaya, was
it? Yeah, Kunitskaya beat her up. And so did, what's her name? Was it Avila? Kicked her in the face twice in the first round. It was pretty bad. Yeah, but, you know, I think she's quicker than Davis. I think she's enough of a threat on the ground to maybe force Davis into choosing to strike over trying to grapple. And I also think a takedown offense is probably good enough, even though she was taken down against Kunitskaya. You know, she was, in fact, what are the stats on that? Yeah, I think, what is a takedown offense? She has 71% takedown offense. I feel like she might be able to enforce a striking exchange. And I think she's a little bit quicker. Alexis Davis doesn't move her head. Her footwork's gotten better. She does move side to side a lot, but she is still very, very hittable. She's got a lot of scar tissue as well.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a test for Stolyarenko. Like, if you can't beat Alexis Davis, then...
Yeah, you're not quite ready for the UFC. Yeah, I agree.
But one thing I noticed about her, even when she was fighting against Kunitskaya, even when she was getting beat up against the fence, she was always... She always had the submission threat. She was always going for an ankle, yeah. Or she was going for a few guillotine attempts.
She was deep in an armbar. Is it second round?
I think so. Yeah,
yeah. And Kuniskaya had just escaped before the end of the second round. Yeah, I mean, she's got legit like armbar submissions on a record: 20 seconds, 19 seconds, 30 seconds, 22 seconds, 23 seconds, 38 seconds. I don't know what custom rules matches are, but yeah, I mean, she's lethal off her back. That's quite clear. But I think she's going to see the hit ability of Davis, and I think she's going to keep it on the feet.
Yeah,
I think Stolyarenko by decision.
Yeah,
that's what I'm picking.
I got Stolyarenko by submission.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, the thing is with Davis, I think her ground game and her fight IQ is good enough for her to be able to avoid getting caught in anything. Like you look back to you know, the last time she was submitted, it was Sarah McMahon back in 2016. You know, and she's fought some good grapplers since then, and she went to a decision with she's got a win over Liz Carmouche. She went to a decision with Chikagian, with Jennifer Meyer. I think she's smart enough and experienced enough to not get stopped. But I think I think Stolyarenko is going to be able to outpace her.
Yeah,
should be a good one though.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good one. There seems to be a lot of, I've noticed it just with the first three fights, almost like mirror image stylistically. There's a lot of that throughout this card. I find
there are, yeah, there are, and then there are some that are completely opposite, like this next one, where you've got Jason Witt against Phil Rowe.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, I mean striker v grappler, but. Witt has got some power in him as well. I mean, he pinged Barbarena a few times. But Phil Rowe was very impressive in that Kosei fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He defended takedowns and he was calm, and then he was able to... And those knees were vicious. And I think they'll be really useful because, I mean, the height advantage, there's a 10-inch reach advantage for Phil Rowe.
Mm.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like Witt, he's got a lot of power, but... Yeah, I think he'll definitely be looking for a takedown.
Mm.
But then Phil Hawes, he's good jiu-jitsu background as well, because he does a lot of
Phil Hawes is later. Now, that would be a very different fight, because Phil Hawes is much more of a powerful wrestler.
But yeah,
Phil Rowe's really long and rangy. I actually kind of touch sparred with him a little bit at the PI a couple of years ago. Mm. He's very, very difficult to read because he's got such long limbs. They kind of fold out of nowhere. And yeah, he's very, very difficult to read. I think if he's able to keep Jason Witt on the end of his strikes, he's going to be all right. But Witt, of course, he's going to be trying to close distance. Mm. He's going to try and wrestle him. And there is always that threat of a shot coming over the top. So the double threat of is he level changing or is he striking? That might catch him out. He might be better to be kind of skirting the octagon because he had good takedown offense against the cage.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I think once Jason Witt gets him to the floor, it's going to be very, very difficult for him to get back up. I think Witt's going to be able to break him down. And, you know, there's so many easy ways for him to grip through and control wrists with those big long limbs.
Yeah.
I don't know. And experience is on Jason Witt's side as well. How did you pick it?
I did pick Phil Rowe.
Mm.
Yeah, because I feel like he dealt so well with Kosei, like takedown defense. I just think if he can repeat that and keep it on the feet, then I think he'll just outstrike him and catch him like he did Kosei. Mm. Working the body, like kicks up the middle and stuff.
Yeah. You know, what I could see happening is him getting comfortable defending takedowns as Jason Witt's level changing into the fence, and he's able to stuff those takedowns, and then he starts timing him and catches him with a knee. If at any point Phil Rowe has Jason Witt hurt and he's able to clamp onto a tie clinch, he's going to be able to smash him to pieces with knees. And I bet he's been working elbows as well, because there were a couple of moments in the Kosei fight where he was close and he landed a couple of good body shots, and then he went with this kind of like, it looked like it was like an open palm strike. Mm. And I thought to myself, dude, if you had a couple of elbows there, you'd have opened him up.
Yeah.
He's also been doing a lot of grappling as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's what I noticed. Because he had a grappling match against Gordon Ryan.
Against Gordon Ryan, yeah. Who's on the new Lex Fridman podcast, which I'm probably going to listen to later.
I mean, he did lose, but you know, of course. he's still competing against that level.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, he's done a few though recently, hasn't he? I'm just looking at his record. So he had three. He had two before the Kosei fight. Submission Underground, and then Who's Number One, which I think had Craig Jones on it. And then he's had two since the Kosei fight. So the good thing is he's staying active. Like there's a benefit, no matter what it is, to traveling to an arena and preparing to compete and then walking out. It doesn't matter what it is. Even if you're competing in chess between events, the walk out into the arena where you've got that bit of anxiety and the butterflies is, if you can compartmentalize that and deal with that on its own, it's not going to affect your martial arts quite as much.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the fact that he's putting himself in these positions, like against Gordon Ryan, where it's like, let's see what happens. I don't mind. You know, I'm not, it shows a lack of ego on his part, which will probably open up his mind in training as well. I would imagine him to be a very coachable individual. Jason Witt's had a lot of experience. 19-7 is his record. It's just my concern is that Witt might be able to take him down and just maul him. And Rowe might not be able to build himself up because he's got such long limbs. Witt might be able to just tie him up and lock him down.
Do you think he might be able to catch him with something? Like a guillotine or...
I mean, he has got a guillotine on his record. Yeah. He has got rear naked chokes on his record. So it might be a case of him being able to stuff a takedown. You know, maybe land some of those Travis Brown elbows up against the fence and then take his back from there. I'm picking Phil Rowe.
Yeah, I'm going to Phil Rowe as well.
I think it's a tough fight for him. I think it's going to be a real tough test.
Yeah, pretty sure he's behind the boombox. He's got a little music shop and stuff, so yeah, speakers and whatnot.
I think Mystery's got one, hasn't he? He brought one to the gym.
UFC 248 got that, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Adesanya Romero.
Did he rob it from someone?
No, they gave it to him.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's good. So we're both going Phil Rowe, are we?
Yeah, Phil Rowe.
I think it's a hard fight for him, and I think it's a big ask, especially with the experience difference as well, but I think you could catch him. I'm seeing a knee up the center as Jason Witt level changes. Yeah. Okay. This next one I am very interested in.
Yeah.
So Marc-Andre Barrio is like Alexis Davis as far as a divisional test. You know, loads of experience, like tough, fought in a couple of different weight classes. Always will take you the distance if you can't get him out of there. Do you know what I mean? He's just such a fucking durable.
Doesn't stop, does he?
Doesn't stop. Yeah. His nickname's the Power Bar for a reason. I mean, I've called a couple of his fights, and even in moments where he's been getting like pieced up, he's still kind of mauling forward and, you know, powering through stuff. He's not got the most finesseful style, but fucking hell, he's a problem for everybody. Yeah. And he's fighting Chidi Njokwani, who is the brother of Anthony Njokwani, who was also an assassin.
Chidi Bang Bang.
Chidi.
Brilliant. It's a good fight name.
Mate, this is a really, really interesting one. So Barrio, he had a bit of a rough run in the UFC because he came over from TKO. He was a double champ in TKO, welterweight and middleweight. Then he came into the UFC and he lost a decision to Sanchez, a decision to Jotko, and then a decision to Junyoung Park. And he battled hard in every one of those, and it just didn't work his way. Then there was the no contest against Oscar Pejota, which was... What was that for? Why was that a no contest? Anyway. Yeah. And now he's picked up two wins. So... A ground and pound win over Abu Azaitar, which illustrates the point that we're making. Like, he'll just wear you out. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was 4 seconds before the end of the fight.
Yeah.
And then the decision against Dolce Lunghi Ambulla was just, I just felt drained for him, you know?
Yeah, the Abu one was a bit weird, wasn't it? Because he kind of, didn't he go to pick his mouthpiece up or something?
he was so tired.
Hanging. Yeah, so I think tired. It was a combination of like kind of being dazed and tired and picking his mouthpiece up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. If you're going to pick your mouth guard up when someone can yeah. can smack you in the head, though, they're probably fighting you stopping anyway.
Yeah.
So Chidi Njikwani is a lethal striker.
Mm.
There's some really nice little bits in his game, which, to be honest, I've watched his fights as they've happened, but I've not really fully like delved into his game. And as I watched his contender series fight against Souza, there were a few things that he did that were just really very smart, like things that double strikes with the same arm. It was right towards the end of the fight, right towards the end of the fight. So he finishes it with three smashing elbows. But right before that, he does a little jab to the body. He goes jab, bang, 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 and finishes the fight with that. And it's like the acceleration in pace, the shift in pace, the use of both the strikes together. I was very impressed with it. And then, you know, going back and watching some of his older fights and seeing his footwork and how he kind of drifts back and forth and pulls people in. As long as he's got a gas tank, I think he's going to be able to beat Barrio up. What do you reckon?
I had Barrio.
Did you reckon? You reckon he's going to maul him? Yeah.
I think because Chidi, I think he's a better striker technically.
Yeah.
Like much better. But I think if Barry Holt can just put it on him and close that, a bit like, you know, Calvin against Giga.
Yeah.
If he can close that distance and take away his like long range and just put it on him.
Yeah.
I think he can like get hit to hit kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is his game, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is his game. I don't know. I just like when you look at Njikwani's game, when you look at his experience as well, I mean, 20-7. And the majority of his losses are to high-level fighters, guys that have been in the UFC, Brandon Thatch, Jeremy Kimball. I mean, you know, Andrei Korshkov was a fantastic fight, a fantastic opponent. You know, he's had some really hard fights all the way through. He's got a win over Melvin Gallard, who was always a fun one to watch. I don't know. I think now is the right time for Njikwani to come to the UFC. Mm. I think he's got the experience. I think people will look at those seven losses and underestimate him. And I think people will see Barrio as a guy that's picked up two impressive wins in the UFC by drowning people in pace and persistence. And I think they'll see the same. I think people will expect him to be able to do that to Njikwani. But I think he's going to be able to catch him with something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I mean,
I think he's got very, very slick striking.
Yeah. He was there. He caught, who was his fight against? The contender series. Yeah, sorry. Souza.
Mm.
As Souza was charging forward and he caught him with a straight right. That was great. Like, and if Barriot does rush in a little bit, he can catch him with something like that. Then.
Yeah.
Could probably see it going, but I did think Barry Holt.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're going with the UFC vets today. I'm going with the debutants. Yeah, I am excited to see Njikwani in the UFC. I mean, he's, you know, his brother set a high standard for striking, but I don't know. I think okay, he's not made his UFC debut yet, right? In 12 months' time, if he's got the personality to back it up. Which he is a little bit quiet, but he might find his feet in the UFC. I think we might be seeing him as a challenger to Adesanya.
Yeah.
Mm. I think if you look at his game, he's good enough as a striker to be able to see the games that Adesanya's playing, and he's well-rounded enough to be able to create problems for him on the ground. Like, his grappling against Souza was good.
Mm.
He holds position well to strike. He's not that interested in submissions. I mean, you know, when he's stopping people, he's stopping them with strikes. Body kicks. I'm going to pick a body kick. I think he's going to catch Barrio with a body kick as he's walking in. He's going to get him lifting his arms up and flinching and wham, bam, in the body.
Do you think he's coming into the UFC at a good time in his career?
Yeah, I do.
Who was it last week on the card? Victor Henry. A similar circumstance.
Exactly. Another guy with, what was his record, 21-4?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, another person that had... Like, there's just a few guys, they kind of do the circuit, and, like, Ben Askren was a bit like this. Like, he'd been around the circuit outside the UFC and kind of beaten everybody that was worth beating. But he kind of went too long in the circle because Dana didn't like his fighting style. I think sometimes people just arrive at the right time. And although, you know, I think the thing that slowed him down is that he has picked up a few losses. But then sometimes people learn as they go, and he's never shied away from a tough fight.
Mm.
He's never shied away from a tough fight. Yeah, I'm excited for him. I'm all for it. I'm all for a crisp striker. I'm a fan of Barrio, but I do think he's too hittable for this kind of opponent.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting behind Chidi now, but
I'm gonna stick. You're gonna stick.
I'm gonna stick with Barrio.
Okay, okay.
Yeah,
this next one's a banger as well. But I do expect this one to be a decision. And what's interesting about this one, you're talking about fighters being matched up who are very similar. This is one of those fights. Mm. Because both of them, in their last fight, I mean, Trezano won against, what was he called, Ludovic Klein.
Yeah.
The only time he was on the back foot, as it were, was when Klein had taken him down and was just kind of holding him against the fence and not really trying to progress too much. Dawodu had Movsaivluev on him for the whole fucking fight.
Yeah.
And it was endlessly frustrating. I think the UFC have watched both of these guys and seen their frustration on the ground and gone, let's just match these guys.
Yeah,
together.
Yeah.
Neither of them are like huge punchers.
No. I find that with Dawodu, like, his output's quite high.
Yeah.
He seems like he hits with a lot of power, but it doesn't.
You don't seem to hurt people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, it is weird.
Because he kind of reminded me a little bit like a bit of Muay Thai, like tough, like gets hit and then hits hard. But yeah, in his last fight, who was it? His decision.
Against Ivluev?
No, the one...
Oh,
one
Tukhugov.
Yeah.
Zubaira Tukhugov or Hulu Arce. Botniak, that was a decision. The one against Yoshinori Hori was the
Hori,
head kick.
Yeah. That was the one I watched, yeah.
That was nice. It was a, you know, but it was a late finish. And if you look down his record, he's not like a first-round finisher. The last time he stopped somebody in the first round was back in 2014. I think he's probably a much more powerful kicker than he is a puncher. Yeah. And I think when it comes to Mike Trezano, although he showed really good body kicks in his last fight, I think he's much more of a boxer than he is a kicker. Like, he is a well-rounded martial artist, but I think he lent into that kick against Ludovic Klein because he's southpaw, so his body was open. But Trezano, it's a bit like the main event, like Sean Strickland. He's got that...
Yeah.
That... Oh, just... You know what I mean? That style where it's frustrating. And like the moments where Klein had taken him down in that fight, you could see on Klein's face, he was like hitting the snooze button on an alarm clock. Yeah. Like, just give me just 30 seconds just to breathe so he's not punching me in the face.
Yeah.
And even then he was just hammering him and looking at the referee like, you know what I mean? I think this is really good matchmaking. I think it might be a real banger, but I don't know as either of these guys are going to stop the other one. I think we might see a decision.
Yeah, I thought it would go decision. I went for Dawodu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go Trezano then. Honestly, it's difficult to pick him.
He's got a great mullet.
Yeah. Mate, Trezano. That is flowing, isn't it? If he's not got a fucking hair conditioner sponsor after this fight, I don't know what's going on. I hope he's still got it. It should be super long by now. You know, he should have it braided and... curled up into a scorpion's tail. Anyway, I'm going to go Mike Trezano. Only for the reason that I think Trezano's mentally very strong. And I think Dawodu can kind of come apart at the seams a little bit. I think if he's pressured, he can start to doubt himself a bit.
Yeah.
Because
he was on a bit of a trajectory, wasn't he, when he came in? Well, he lost his debut and he got five fights.
Yeah, 40 seconds against Danny Henry,
yeah.
Guillotine, and I remember that fight. There was a lot of buzz around him. There was one of the submissions of the year for 2018. That was for Danny Henry. Like, there was a lot of buzz around him, and the feeling was like Danny Henry's in for a real tough one here, and he just whipped on that guillotine super quick. But then after that, as you said, Austin Arnett, Kyle Botniak, Yoshinori Hori, Julio Arce and Zubaira Tukhugov, but out of the five, there are three split decisions. You know, That concerns me. And Mosai Ivluev, there's no shame in that loss because he's a nightmare. But I think Mike Trezano, especially with the attitude that he had in his last fight, where he was just pushing Klein back, constantly walking him down, and wow, I'm going with Mike Trezano.
Yeah, I thought this was like my pick for potential fight of the night.
Yeah,
yeah,
good shout. Yeah, good shout. I think there are a couple. My next pick for my pick for fight of the night is the next one.
Oh yeah, yeah. I take that back. Maybe probably would be this one.
Well, there is another one as well, because the Erosa Peterson one could really be a fight of the night. Any fight where the two guys have got 18 losses between them, you just know it's going to be fun. But my concern with the Miles Johns Castaneda fight is that it might end up being a performance of the night, because I don't think it's going to last very long.
Right. Okay.
I think it's going to be. Well, I mean, I say that, but then Miles John is a late finisher.
Yeah, that was one thing, that he seems to maintain power right until the end of his fights.
Yeah, that surprises me, because he doesn't look like he would, especially with the way he defends takedowns. Like, his scrambles and takedown defense is fucking really good, but then, like you said, he maintains power into the later rounds.
He reminds me a bit of a mini Yoel Romero.
Does
he? Miles Johns.
Yeah, 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 okay.
Because he has that, like, you know, that, like,
dip down. The big dip, the big level change dip.
He does that.
Okay, then, so we'll play MMA Love Child again for this week. So I'll say that Miles Johns is the MMA love child of Yoel Romero and Ilia Latifi. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
No, I was really impressed with Miles Johns and his late finishing, his power punching, you know, and the angles that he comes at as well. And what was it? Body shot, overhand right.
Was that
who was it? Tell me.
That was not Navidad.
It was Anderson de Santos.
Yeah.
Yeah, Natividad was the uppercut.
Yeah, I like which off was, the clinch.
Yeah.
Kind of, they were coming off the fence. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. I really like this guy. I'm a big fan of Miles Johns. I think he's a real problem for anybody in this division. He's got a good team. He's at Fortis MMA. He's very, very bouncy and elastic, very springy, very powerful. As you said, he carries his power into the later rounds, good takedown defense. He's only 27 as well. Let me see what the stats say about this one. Because on the flip side, John Castaneda is coming off that massive win over Eddie Wineland.
Yeah.
Which was...
I thought he looked...
beautiful.
I thought he looked great in that fight. Like, a lot, really good movement, good boxing, like slipping off and hitting Wineland on his way out.
Yeah.
And then once he hit Wineland and hurt him, it was just like a barrage of like punch, really accurate punches as well.
Yeah. And the one he caught him with was like a sweeping shot as well, wasn't it? Like, he stepped across and dragged it.
Yeah. And it was like,
yeah. And Wineland was like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's a good win. I have a lot of respect for Eddie Wineland and anybody that can get a win like that over him. I think this kid's good. I think Castaneda's good. I'm a big fan of Miles Johns, just purely for, I think, the potential that he's got at 12-1. In Castaneda's a bit further down the river at 18-5. So Miles Johns has a 1-inch reach advantage, but Castaneda has a 5-inch. Sorry, Miles Johns has a 1-inch height advantage. Castaneda has a 5-inch reach advantage. So those long swiping shots that he has, Miles Johns is much better closed in, but as we were talking about with his takedown offense, it's 92% takedown offense. So although there are submissions on John Castaneda's record, I think it's going to be difficult for him to get Miles Johns to the floor unless he punches him there.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually picked Castaneda on this one.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't surprise me, because he is a very, very good fighter.
Yeah.
And he has got more experience. It makes sense to go with him.
Yeah. I think he... Because I do like Miles John. It was a tough one to pick, this one. Because I could see like multiple ways for both of them to win, but...
That's why this one's going to be a bonus winner.
Yeah. I just think Castaneda's just a bit slicker in the striking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if it does stay standing... He's much better at slipping and moving out of the way of shots. And if Miles John's coming with big overhands, he might slip out of the way or roll and catch him. That's so how that's, I saw it anyway.
Yeah, I could see that. So that's two ways of looking at Miles John's finishing statistics, because he's a late finisher, which means the positive is he carries his power into the third round. The negative is he's not putting people out in the first, and Castaneda is. And then, you know, if it does go into the later rounds, he's also got submissions as well. I mean, his last fight before he came into the UFC was an arm triangle in the third round against Marcelo Rojo, who's now on the UFC roster.
Yeah.
So, you know, I genuinely feel like someone's getting a 50K bonus here. I genuinely do think that. I mean, it is a coin toss. I could go with Castaneda as well, but I am going to stick with my pick, Miles Johns.
Yeah.
And you know, and again, you know, it's southpaw v orthodox, and with the kicks that we saw Miles Johns use against DeSantos, now that's an inside low kick, which would then change the balance, and it would change the application of the power of the punches of Castaneda. So even if he has got the longer reach and he starts to sweep, if Miles Johns is chopping into that lead leg, it's gonna cause him problems. Hell of a fight that one is.
Yeah.
That's really good matchmaking.
Yeah.
I kind of don't want to see the guy take a loss, but, you know, that's how it goes. Okay, main card time.
Yeah.
Main card time. This is genius matchmaking, and how the fight above it is where it is compared to some of the ones below it.
Yeah,
I was thinking that. Like Julian Erosa opening the card against Steven Peterson is brilliant. Because you know it's going to deliver. There's no way it's not. Erosa is at 26-9 at that point in his career where he just doesn't give a fuck. Like, he shows up to finish or get finished.
Yeah.
Like, the last time he went to a decision was Grant Dawson. That was a hell of a fight. But almost all of his fights are finishers. And he has a lot of flying knees, Dars chokes, variety of stuff. Head kicks to punches, triangle chokes. He's been in the game a long time. And I think when Ollie was here, we were recording a podcast about Julian Erosa.
Yeah, it was Charles Jourdan.
That was it.
Yeah.
And my prediction was Erosa because he's been riding the chaos for longer.
Mm.
Like he's a bit more experienced than Peterson. And I think Peterson is a real fun opponent for him because he's a similar kind of mindset, you know, 19-9. Loads of different types of finishes on his record, spinning back fists, but tough enough to go to a decision as well. You know, rear naked chokes, guillotines, etc. I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a bit of a back and forth because they both take a lot of risks. I can see Erosa being in bad positions and having to scramble out of stuff. I could see him getting cracked and dropped, but I think his experience is going to pay off here. And I know it's only, what, 7 fights?
Yeah.
But, you know. Erosa's been like swimming in that top pool for a while. He's been in and around the UFC for a while.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Peterson arrived in the UFC fairly recently, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he got that win, spinning back fist win. Then did he fight Chase Hooper after that?
That was it. Yeah. He bullied Chase Hooper. Yeah. He just wasn't really ready for that fight.
Nah, he looked way older.
Yeah.
And big brother, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
That looked like the high school kid that has been in fucking juvenile detention for 2 years, and he's now come back to beat up the nerd at school.
Trying to steal his M&Ms.
There we go, yeah. Trying to steal his fucking skateboard. Yeah, he just didn't seem ready for it, but he's not going to be able to push Erosa around like that. I do think he's going to be able to get to him and hurt him with some stuff, because he does throw a lot of wild stuff as well. But I don't know. I'm a big fan of Julian Erosa. I like the fact that he's just real, you know.
Yeah.
He's gotten past the stage in his career where he's willing to tolerate the bullshit, you know. Like when he came out of the Ultimate Fighter, you got to think. So he fought on UFC 196, McGregor Diaz. That was the last time he fought in the UFC before he was released, and he lost to Taruto Ishihara, who's another one of those kind of fighters that's a coin toss. It could have gone either way. But then it's like, then he goes on to King of the Cage and he's fighting someone that's trying to make a name off him. Then he goes into Prime Fighting and fights Austin Springer, who's trying to make a name off him, of course. Then he goes over to Cage Warriors, Paddy Pim, loses to Paddy. You know, you can imagine what it's like to go from like the Ultimate Fighter or from a UFC career that wasn't great, like you lose three fights, you get released. Then you go onto the lower circuit and you get three or four fights where if you go, unless you go to one show and you have a good relationship with that promoter, you're going to find yourself floating around all these shows fighting their local guy.
Yeah, the prospects coming through.
Exactly.
Like Paddy.
You never know when you're going to meet a fucking John Jones, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like some guy that's like 10-0 that, you know, not had much experience because he starched everybody. And you just never know. It's a much more difficult scene to be on, I think, especially because you can't find footage. And usually you're getting paid fucking nothing to fight these guys. So I'm glad he's back in the UFC. It's where he belongs.
Yeah, he's fun to watch.
He is fun to watch.
I had Herosa as well.
Did you?
Yeah, I just think, like you said, his experience. I can't imagine Peterson's going to have anything that he's not seen before.
He's seen all the spinning back fists.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, Herosa's one of them guys, like in the Charles Jourdain fight, when it looks like he's out of, or he's getting a little bit overwhelmed, he'll just pull some out crazy.
Exactly. He'll wrap a neck, he'll end up with like a Darce choke or something. Okay, we're both going to Rosa.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I will say, of all the fights on the card, if you put these two guys' surnames together, it's a fucking cool brand name, isn't it? Battle and Gore. Battle and Gore. I can imagine it being on like some kind of high end kitchenware.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Battle and Gore, like pots and pans. I can definitely see it.
I had him as like a comic book character fight.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Battle against Trijon Gore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. Battle and Gore. Brilliant.
Yeah, good names.
Yeah. Bit of a weird fight. Bit of an odd one to be this place on the card. So, and nothing against either guy. So Brian Battle's 6-1 and Trijon Gore is 3-0. And very similar. Very similar to one another, which is the theme of the card. They're either completely different or very, very similar.
They're both coming off tough as well, aren't they?
Yeah. Now, I didn't watch that season of The Ultimate Fighter. I, if you watched it, you probably know more about these guys than I did. So I apologize for my little knowledge, but I just struggle to get through tough these days. And there's so many more good fights to watch. Mate, did you... I know we're going to digress here slightly. The ONE Championship kickboxing matches.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen the finishes. I haven't seen the...
Mate, you've got to watch them. They're free on YouTube. Go and watch them. Chingiz Alazov stopping Smoking Joe Nutterwort in the first round. He fucking hits him with this combo. He goes, what is it? It's like a jab cross hook body kick. And Nutterwort swings a wild shot back and he just slips out of the way.
Mm.
Counter shot and drops him. It's beautiful. And then Sita Chai just put a clinic on David Kirier. Yeah. ONE Championship are doing some good things. I might do an aftermath of that tournament because the main event's set up now and it's going to be a banger. So anyway.
Alazov Sita Chai.
Sita Chai. And then we've got Rod Tang against DJ coming up as well. Yeah, good shit, good shit. Okay. Trijon Gore against Brian Battle. So 4-0? I've got him 3-0 on Tapology.
I had him on 3-0.
He's apparently maybe they're counting one of his tough fights because they've got Brian Battle at 7-1 as well. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Fuck it. Brian Battle's got an inch reach advantage, and Trijon Gore's got no reach according to UFC stats. 100% takedown accuracy for Brian Battle. Now he did end up with that rear naked choke, didn't he? On the in his last fight. Where's his record? Where am I here?
Yeah, it was Contender. Was it? Sorry, the tough. Gilbert Urbina was his UFC debut, wasn't it?
That was it. But he had the tough shorts on, which was very confusing.
Yeah, that because it was the final, I think. Yeah. But they class it as a fight night.
Yeah,
I think the final. Yeah,
he's got. I mean, I think these two could quite easily stand and slug it out or trade back exchanges. It's a bit similar to the light heavyweight fight with Danilo Marquez. Like they could both be chasing for one another's back. I do think that Brian Battle's probably got a bit better boxing.
Yeah,
but I don't know if he hits with the same kind of power that Trijon Gore does. I mean, I don't know. I don't know much about these two guys.
Yeah.
I do feel like Battle is going to probably want this fight on the floor. You look through his record. He's got a lot of different a lot of different submissions on his record. And I do feel like Gore might be inclined to grapple with him, which might not be ideal. I watched a couple of his older fights, Trishan Gore. There was one where he had a back and forth with LJ Jones. And at the end of the first round, Jones stood up. You've not watched this, have you?
Not that far, no.
At the end of the first round, LJ Jones is in Trishan Gore's guard. Land a bit of ground and pound, but nothing significant. Stands up. And as he walks, his knee fucking dislocates. And he just kind of goes stiff and falls so he doesn't fuck it up anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It like pops back into place, but like, doctor stoppage. It was very, very nasty. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a coin toss for this. I'll go with Brian Battle because I think he's got a more direct game with his submissions.
Yeah, I went with Battle.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit better all round and he can... The one thing I saw about Trishan Gore, he throws his strikes to kind of tie into his grappling.
Yeah.
So he'll throw with the intention to go for a takedown.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Brian is a bit better at separating it. He can stand and box and then he'll go to the next stage kind of thing.
Yeah. There were a few times where he had being up against the fence and he was throwing nice. He throws his hooks. Have you noticed how he throws his hooks kind of odd?
Yeah.
It's like it's a bit like Bobby Knuckles. He does the same thing. Whitaker throws it with his palm down, but he kind of sweeps across with it. Yeah.
Yeah. His boxing reminded me a little bit of Daukus.
Mm.
Chris
mm-hmm,
Daukus. Mm-hmm. Just that kind of.
Yeah.
Constant. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll go Brian Battle as well then.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one is another battle of cardio, in my opinion. Sam Alvey against Phil Hawes. So Sam Alvey is kind of bouncing around weight classes, isn't he? He was up at light heavyweight for a bit.
He's on a 6-fight losing streak.
Is he really? At the minute.
Yeah.
Is he? No. Is he?
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah, he is. Fuck. But he's been bouncing up and down weight. So let's have a look at this. So where are we? So his last fight at middleweight was Ramazan Ameev. Then he went up to light heavyweight and stopped Pratniao in the first round. Then he won a split decision against Jan Vellante, which was a lot of fun. Lost to Little Nog. Got stopped by Jimmy Crute. Lost to Clinton Abreu, lost to Ryan Spann. Jeez, it's been a rough run for him, hasn't it? Got a draw against Darren Jung. And then he came back down to middleweight and fought Julian Marquez, lost by Rene Kitcho. Then he lost a split decision to Wellington Turman as well. And he's still smiling.
I couldn't really... I mean, just based off that, I mean, I can't really see Phil Hawes not winning. And I think this might be a bit of a fight for Phil Hawes to get his confidence back.
Yeah.
Because he lost his last fight against Chris Curtis.
He did. And he had a good little run as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because he lost to Julian Marquez as well on the Contender Series. And he was just so tired.
Yeah.
He was so tired. And then he went away and he picked up a win in Bellator and two wins in Brave, all three first rounders. And then he came back to Contender Series and won that one in the first round. And then he starched Malkoon at the Gaethje Khabib card. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Like, stiffed him. And then he had two decisions, which for me was good because he fought Imavov to a decision, who was somebody else that struggled with his gas tank in his debut. And then he fought Kyle Daukus, who I thought was going to be able to outpace him. And he showed good conditioning in that. He showed development in his game. And, you know, a first-round stoppage loss is one of those things that light heavyweight, as we said earlier in the show.
Yeah, because he was winning that fight. And Chris Curtis just, I mean, props to Chris Curtis, he was very patient and he was waiting for it.
He was biding his time.
And I do like the look of Chris Curtis, to be fair.
Yeah, for sure.
But
and then you look at the experience that Chris Curtis has got, you know, like 26-8 was his record compared to Phil Hawes at 11-2. Sam Alvey's got a massive amount of experience, but I don't think he's got the same kind of punching power.
Nah.
I know he's a banger, and I know that he's a gamer, but just 6-fight losing streak, man. Yeah. His soul must be fucking crushed. Like, that smile, I've always thought that smile was a little bit manic, you know?
Crazy smile.
Like, it's a little bit It's a little bit like a Batman villain. Like, you know what I mean? Was it Jack Nicholson as the Joker?
Yeah,
real good manic smile, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like that kind of, you know, like on Black Hole Sun, Soundgarden's music video where they start distorting their faces. That's a great music video. Yeah, I feel bad for Sam Alvey here.
Yeah.
I think it might be time to call it a day before he's...
I think this, like I said, I think it might be a fight to get Phil Hawes on, back on track a little bit after that loss.
Yeah.
I've got Phil Hawes.
Yeah, me too. Poor old Sam. Poor old Sam. That's the other thing. You know full well that if Sam Alvey loses this and gets released after a 7-fight losing streak, he's not fucking done. He's going to show up on that Triangle Triller show fighting fucking Mike Perry in MMA sparring gloves or something. Or he'll, you know what I mean? There'll be something weird in his future like that. I can see it now.
Maybe Khabib will get him on Eagle FC.
There we go. He'll be fucking Rashad Evans' next opponent. Yeah. He'll rematch Rashad Evans. Oh, no, I hope not. Anyway, let's move on. That's another reason why we should be paying these fighters, so we don't have to see them fighting into their fucking retirement. Anyway, so I am thoroughly on board with the Shavkat Rakhmonov train.
Same.
I think he's very, very good. I think Carlson Harris is an interesting matchup for him because that's not in any way an easy matchup. They've matched him against someone that's got great neck attacks, which is not ideal for someone who's a good wrestler, and someone who has got power striking, as we saw in his last fight against Kasanganai. And Shavkat Rakhmonov, I feel like, although his last opponent was not... I mean, I thought Alex Oliveira was a much tougher test for him than Prezeris, because Oliveira is a really odd and awkward individual. He's very, very difficult to pin down. First round guillotine, beautiful work. But then they give him Michel Prezeris, who was like 3 foot taller. It was like a Lord of the Rings style fight. It was like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just looked like such an odd matchup. I kind of didn't understand the point of it.
The one thing I really liked about Rakhmonov in both his UFC fights, it was the knee that he threw against both opponents, and it was just the end from there. Alex Oliveira, both up against the fence as well.
Yeah,
came right in with a knee. Yeah, and then against Oliveira, that's what led to the guillotine, and Prezeris. After that knee, it was just the end.
Yeah,
I really like that. He's very accurate and very calculated. I find he's quite patient. You know, he's not very predictable either. You don't really know what he's going to do.
He's very difficult to read.
Yeah,
even how he stands. It's, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it's really odd. It's a really odd style, but it's so fucking effective.
Yeah,
he's very, very good. What is he? 14-0 now.
Yeah.
I also very much like the look of Carlson Harris. I was impressed with his fight against Kasanganai and, you know, against Christian Aguilera, the Anaconda choke. Immediately in two fights, he showed diversity in his skill set, and he's fought just over a round total in the UFC. Like, you go back into his career, he's got Dars choke wins. You know, he's got a lot of TKO stoppages, but that Dars choke might be something interesting to think about. It might give Rakhmonov a second thought of level changing. It might mean we'll see him striking a little bit more, which I'd like to see, because Rakhmonov, is that upright stance that he's got is not ideal for someone with long power hooks.
Yeah.
There must be a reach advantage for Harris as well. Let me have a look at the stats.
The only thing with Harris, I thought, again, in his last fight against Impa, even though he did get the finish and the knockout, I just thought he was a bit reckless. Like, his shots are quite looping, and it's a bit scrappy, I found.
Yeah.
So I just think Rakhmonov might be able to read him.
Yeah.
I think he's a bit too predictable for Rakhmonov.
Yeah. I mean, I have Rakhmonov to win it, but I do think Carlson Harris could be... It could quite easily be just a... Who was it that Makhachev lost to? He got knocked out. Was it by Moicano?
Who
was it knocked him out? But it was just, you know what I mean? It was just one of them fights. It was like, if they fought again, it probably wouldn't happen. You know, I could see, I could see Harris catching him with something that, like, if these guys fought 10 times, I think Carlson might catch him twice. And I think majority of the time, maybe even once, but I think Rakhmonov most of the time will roll through him. But I think there are things that he could underestimate Carlson Harris. And undefeated fighters, they do get to a point where sometimes they're just a little bit, it's not complacent, isn't the right word. I guess a little bit overconfident sometimes, or maybe a feeling of invincibility.
Yeah,
you know. Sometimes that can leave you vulnerable for someone that's a bit wild. Yeah.
And if you get caught, you don't know what to do in that position because you've never been there before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he could get clipped and knocked down, and as he's scrambling for a takedown, get caught in a darce choke. Yeah. Like, everything could go wrong in that first round, and he could be sitting there at the end of it like, what the fuck just happened? Like, they're the kind of circumstances I could see him losing. Similar to Makhachev. Have you got his record?
Yeah, Adriano Martins.
Martins, yeah, that's it, too. Yeah. Like, that just wouldn't happen if they fought again.
Yeah.
You know, not that Martins is not a good fighter, because he is, but, you know, you just know how they stack up. There's no way that Rakhmonov... Like, there was a lot less chance that he was going to get taken out by a big overhand from Prezeris. Like, you knew he was going to be dealing with takedowns from Prezeris, because at some point, Prezeris is going to realize he's going to need a footstool to reach his head. Yeah. I think Rakhmonov, but I can't underestimate Carlson Harris.
No.
I can't.
He's another one who's, well, not another one, but he's come into the UFC quite late. He's 34, isn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, he's only had two fights in the UFC, but he's on a good run, so I don't know whether it's like, how far can he go? And you know what I mean? This is like his last.
Yeah, maybe.
Last run.
Yeah, 34. 34. Is that a lot of fights? 17-4.
Mm.
Rakhmonov's only 27. Jeez. Scary. Scary what these kids are capable of. Okay. So you're going with Rakhmonov?
Yeah, I'm going with Rakhmonov. Okay. Yeah.
Fair play. So we are on to the... Is it co-main event?
Co-main, yeah.
Okay. Punahele Soriano against Nick Maximov. So... Let's just quick tell the tape. So Soriano is 8-1. Maximov is 7-0. Soriano has a 72-inch reach, which is very short for a welterweight. Sorry, for a middleweight. Maximov is 76, so he has a 6-inch reach advantage. Both southpaw. Really high striking output for Punahele in comparison. Both of them with 100% takedown defense. What do you reckon?
Nick Maximov's one of Nick Diaz's prospects, isn't he? Diaz Academy. Because he fought on 266, where Diaz came back. And he looked good. But he was very wrestling, jiu-jitsu focused. And I think Puni is just going to be a lot more... It's a bit of a step up, I think, from his debut.
Yeah.
So I think Puni's good, and he's got a lot of power. I had Puni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the last two wins on Puni's record, Pehota and Todorovic, two first-round stoppages, two guys that were prospects coming into the UFC. Todorovic was undefeated. And both guys... If it hits the floor, you're in trouble because they're both really slick on the ground. Like, Pehota was an ADCC European champion, I believe, and then Todorovic, as we know, is a high level grappler. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Maximov might be able to drown him for a couple of rounds and just sap the life out of Soriano, but I do expect that, you know, especially because, you know, Extreme Couture, there's a good wrestling pedigree coming out of there currently with Ngannou and everything. Whatever they're doing in those wrestling sessions is working. And I think they've got a really good working environment right now. I think that's a big asset to be fighting out of Extreme Couture.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm going with Soriano on that one. I don't have a lot more to say about it, to be honest.
No, I mean, the thing, like, yeah, I think Puni's just going to outpace him, and he's got a lot more power, and I don't think Maximov... He reminded me a little bit of Marvin Vettori in his striking. He's Well, he's not really striking, but his build, he's quite short and he doesn't really hit with a lot of power.
Yeah. Little bit stiff and restricted in some ways. Yeah. Stays busy, has a lot of grappling matches. I'm going with Soriano.
I got Soriano as well.
Okay, main event time. Main event time. Well, you just watched the War Room because you've been editing it. So what do you reckon?
I've got Jack. Yeah. I mean, I don't really like Strickland anyway. That's why I picked Jack. Yeah. But
you did say though, after we'd recorded the War Room, that you were a little bit more interested in this fight now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Because I can see Strickland winning for sure, and I do think his overwhelming pressure and his striking, and like you said, Hermanson against Vettori, similar situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other one as well is Hermanson against Cannonier.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Cannonier is a terrifying puncher, and Hermanson did not look comfortable once he'd been hit a couple of times. You know, like there was a clear panic to get the fight to the floor. Like when he fought Jacare and Merchart, he was far more. I don't know. He was far more willing to try and strike. Mm. Like, I mean, I've seen him early in his career, as I talked about in the War Room. You know, when he was fighting on Cage Warriors. Like, I remember being at the Alan Carlos fight, and he has got good boxing, but he has to have confidence to back it up. And I think he's had his confidence shaken a couple of times in the UFC with his striking. You know, getting stopped by Santos and, you know, obviously the Cannonier fight kind of worked against him. And then Vettori kind of walked him down and beat him up a bit. You know, it wasn't a pleasant experience for him. And my thought is that Strickland could quite easily replicate that. The difference is Strickland's more difficult to predict than Marvin Vettori.
Yeah.
You know? I actually think that would be a really interesting fight. I'm not much of a fan of Strickland either, as you know. I think his style's kind of ugly and a little bit limited. But then again, you know, Marvin Vettori, for as fun as he is to watch, his style's quite limited as well in some ways. Strickland might be the smarter of the two, though, fight IQ-wise, when it comes to him and Vettori. And I don't think that bodes well for Hermanson. I would like to see Hermanson, honestly, fan speaking, I would like to see Hermanson be able to take him down with that spinning trip that he used against David Branch, clamp onto his neck and choke him.
Yeah.
Sean Strickland's never been submitted.
No.
I don't think he's going to be easy to take down. It's like 82% takedown offense. I think he's going to be a motherfucker to get to the floor. And I think he's going to be hard to hold down as well. You know, he was one of Bisping's sparring partners. And if he wasn't tough enough to go through rounds, Bisping wouldn't have brought him in.
I mean, the thing is with Hermanson, I think if he can like you're saying about confidence, if he can be confident to give back whatever Strickland's, if he can match him like strike for strike, I think that's the only way. It's annoying because I do want Hermanson to win, but I can't picture it in my head.
No. The other tricky thing with Strickland's style, just going off what you've just said, is if Hermanson tries to match Strickland's pace, he won't be doing it with the same amount of power, because Strickland doesn't put that much power into stuff, which is why he can throw however many punches he does around. It's quite a lot. He has a high work rate. And I think if Hermanson goes punch for punch with him, he'll try harder with each one of his punches and he'll get tired quicker.
Yeah.
And that's where Strickland's style comes in, and he's such a benefit, because he kind of plods. You know, it's a trickle. You know, Sean Trickland. You know, it's like trying to fall asleep with a tap dripping on your head. It's kind of how I'd imagine it.
He's got that like Kevin Holland constantly talking and like pissing people off as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know, as you said, if Hermanson's confidence is, or, and he's, Hermanson's a nice guy, isn't he? He's not one to be like going back on stuff like
no,
that.
No, so he won't be chatting back and forth, for sure.
He'll just be smiling and just be like, let's fight.
Yeah.
I mean,
Hermanson's also got really good ground and pound. So if he is able to get it to the ground, then that's where his striking comes in. But I don't think he manages the striking very well against Strickland. I really don't. I have a bad feeling for him going into this one.
Do you think he should take the route of what he did against Gastelum then? Is just to kind of look for that and attack it?
I mean, he could, but the difference between the two, and I can expand on this a little bit because I mentioned it in the war room. Like Gastelum's, he's not where Sam Alvey is, but he's on his way there. You know what I mean? He's a much higher echelon of a middleweight that's kind of had it. You know, like yeah. I don't feel like he's got the same kind of motivation. I mean, I've always kind of questioned Calvin's motivation a bit because he is really a welterweight, and I do feel like if he wanted to really optimize himself in the modern day of MMA, you know, he could have done without those additional few calories for a little while, you know, while he was fighting. I think he would have been really effective at welterweight. Like, even now, I wouldn't mind seeing Kelvin Gastelum go back down to welterweight. Like, you could put him straight in there against Colby Covington for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a winnable fight for Gastelum, for sure. In the middleweight division, though, I don't know. I feel like he's a little bit given up because all these guys are getting fucking bigger and stronger and faster and, you know, and he is looking more like a fat welterweight every time he gets in there. And with the Hermanson fight, I mean, he knows how to escape a heel hook. He knew what Hermanson was doing. He knew he was setting him up. Strickland won't give him that time to do it. You know, he'll be defending those ankle attacks and punching him in the face. So I think there's more of a risk in Hermanson trying to sub him off his back than anything. If I was Hermanson, I would be focused on using a tight guard and good head movement, and I would move forward on Strickland because we hardly ever see him get pushed back. I would push him back, I would put him against the fence, and I would take him down as quickly as possible.
Mm.
And I would just hit him as he's getting back up and keep taking him down. I'm just putting him in that cycle, you know. Similar to what DC does to people, but Hermanson being much more focused on ground and pound.
Yeah.
That's a way I can see Hermanson winning. If I was in his team, that's the way I would have trained him for this fight.
Yeah. I think, as well, the toughness of Sean Strickland. Because I feel like if Jack Manson caught Kelvin with that heel hook, and I know you mentioned in the war room, it's like a panic. Like, as soon as someone latches on to it, it's like panic shit, get me out. But I think Strickland, just based off his personality and who he is as a fighter,
yeah,
I think he'll just be like, take my leg, I'll beat the shit out of you.
For sure, I mean? Mate, for sure. He's a bit like Stifler off American Pie, yeah, isn't he? Like, he might even heel hook himself as a party trick just to entertain people and destroy his fucking knee. He's a bit of a madman like that. Yeah. I agree. I think I keep coming back to it. I think Hermanson's best route to victory is ground and pound.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the point where he can really land some heavy shots. He is a powerful puncher, but because he's always in the air when he's on his feet, he's not sitting down on anything, so he's not hitting with impact. I think Sean Strickland's going to walk him down and beat him up.
I can see that happening, but I'm going with my heart this
week.
Do it,
yeah. Do it.
I'm going to go for Jack.
Do it. I'm going logic, and I'm going to hate doing it, but I think Sean Strickland's going to beat him by decision. And I'll probably watch it on Sunday morning because I will not be staying up to watch Sean Strickland do that to Hermanson. I won't do it. I'll keep my fingers crossed for a highlight of Hermanson TKOing him on my Sunday morning Instagram and coffee. But I don't think it's going to happen. Right.
Yeah.
All good?
Yeah, all good, man.
Well, make sure you check out the sponsors, Unbound Merino and X-Brain. The code for both. The code for Unbound Merino is Outlaw, right?
Outlaw,
Without the ED. So we're not EDing on any of these. Outlaw, you get 15% off. And if you're in the US, you get free shipping as well. X-Brain, get all your supplements there, 10% off. Everything across the site, use the code OUTLAW. All your Onnit stuff, all your X-Brain stuff. They've got loads of other things as well there. Loads of nootropics and brain enhancers, and there's a feast on there. So get stuck in. And Unbound, brilliant stuff. Thanks for joining us. Well done, Jamie.
Good to be back.
Good to see you back. We'll see you next week.